John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drop?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, January the 5th, 2011. Today, Egyptian security personnel shot and wounded a Sudanese migrant who was attempting to enter in Israel, apparently seeking work. Israeli daily Haaretz reported that in November of last year, the number of attempts to enter Israel per week reached 700. Most of them came from countries in Africa. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu stated that this issue is a threat to Israel's Jewish character. In the Gaza Strip, the Israeli Air Force attacked two areas overnight under the pretext of responding to a Qassam homemade shell that was allegedly fired from Gaza into an open area in Ashkelon. No injuries were reported. In other news, Catherine Ashton, the foreign policy chief of the European Union, plans to meet with both Israeli and Palestinian officials this week, urging to push the peace talks. In addition, Israeli activists who are involved in protests against the Israeli annexation wall had their homes searched and raided by Israeli police. Police confiscated computers, pictures, clothing and other items. This comes in the midst of a growing attack on Israeli activists in Israel. Also in Israel, the Deputy Israeli Attorney General has asked the police to investigate two Facebook groups, Death to Arabs and Protest in Un al-Fahm against the Islamic Movement, to inciting racism against Arabs. Death to al-Arabs has 170 members and explicitly calls to acts of violence to be carried out against Arabs. In addition, the Knesset will vote on Wednesday on a proposal initiated by the Israel Beitenu to establish a committee of inquiry into groups that are critical of human rights violations committed by the Israeli military. 16 human rights groups signed an open letter protesting the initiative. On Tuesday morning, Israeli Navy detained an unspecified number of Palestinian fishermen who were fishing off the coast of Gaza City. Israel maintains a 3 nautical mile fishing limit, enforced since Israel's 2008 military offensive. Gazan's fishermen are ongoingly harassed by Israeli gunboats. Also, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu sent a letter to the US President Barack Obama asking that he releases Jonathan Pollard, who was spying on Israel's best ally, the United States, and was sentenced in 1987 to life prison. In separate reports, Israeli troops arrested five activists from a European pro-Palestine movement as they were trying to cross the Alhambra military roadblock in the West Bank. With regard to the failed Israeli-Palestinian peace talks, Israeli hard right-wing foreign affairs minister Avigdor Lieberman, speaking to Agency France Press in an exclusive interview, stressed on Tuesday that at least a decade is needed to reach a political agreement with the Palestinians, as he does not see any real goodwill from the Palestinian leadership and there are other issues which have higher priority. That sums up our news for today. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. You have been listening to Palestine Today from International Middle East Media Center. For more updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report has been brought to you by Husam Kassis and Anira Zabal.
The new year started off violently in the occupied West Bank of Palestine when a 36-year-old woman, Jawahar Abu Rama, was overcome by tear gas fired by the Israeli army at protesters in the town of Bilin on December 31st. Jawahar died on New Year's Day. Villagers who participate in a weekly protest are joined each Friday by Israeli supporters and international solidarity activists who are demanding the rerouting of the separation barrier Israel has built, which cuts villagers off from their land. The Israeli Supreme Court has ruled in the Palestinians' favor, but the barrier remains. Abu Rama, the woman who died, was the sister of Bassem Abu Rama, who in April 2009 was also killed by an Israeli tear gas canister fired directly at him at a similar Friday demonstration in Berlin. Many other protesters have been injured by Israeli forces at the town's weekly protests. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhus spoke with Josh Huff, communications director with the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation based in Washington, D.C. He spent almost 2 years as part of a Christian peacemaker team living with Palestinians under siege in South Hebron in the West Bank. He discusses the deteriorating situation in the West Bank and his group's letter sent to Combined Systems, Inc., or CSI, the Pennsylvania-based corporation that supplies most of the tear gas canisters to the Israeli military.
The Abu Rahmi family is a prominent family in the Bilayn area, from which many of the nonviolent demonstrators have come and which has suffered disproportionate casualties as a result of Israel's violent repression of this nonviolent action. There have been a number of the male residents of that family have been imprisoned wrongfully. And then over the last weekend, Jawahar Abu Rahmi, the 36-year-old woman from the same family, now the second person in the family to be killed from Israeli violent military repression of these weekly Friday demonstrations, in this case from inhalation of tear gas. And so we're going to be continuing to put pressure on the State Department using these newly emerging cases of egregious Israeli military violations of human rights and international law, the wrongful killing of unarmed civilians in the West Bank, to continue to put this in front of U.S. policymakers and people who oversee the special relationship between U.S. government and Israeli government. And also the letter that one of our member groups has taken the lead in drafting directly to CSI, Combined Systems Incorporated, which is a U.S. company which manufactures, we are told, the vast majority of the tear gas canisters that are used by the Israeli military in this violent repression of nonviolent activists. The U.S. campaign, we're going to be presenting this letter to CSI, basically saying that you have to stop dispensing these materials to the Israeli military, because given the Israeli military is continuously, systematically violating your own instructions, CSI, and potentially also in violation of U.S. laws, including the Arms Export Control Act, which says that you can't use U.S.-supplied weapons for these means, like we've been doing for several years with the Caterpillar Company, to basically demand that they stop providing these weapons to Israel and using these specific horrifying stories like the death of Jawahar this last Friday to try to convince them of that. And then also sharing these communications with CSI, with the State Department and whoever else in the U.S. government that we're able to speak with, and then also with the general public and the media, to show the linkage that CSI is substantial responsibility for this horrible unfolding of events.
Josh Huff, when I was in Berlin for one of the regular Friday protests back in 2008, the Palestinians, their Israeli supporters, and the international solidarity activists who were there were completely nonviolent. But there were just a couple of Palestinian youths who were shooting stones with slingshots toward the Israeli soldiers. And then Israel used that to say the protest was not nonviolent. Your comment?
One, I would say, just look at the disproportionality of force. We're talking about not stone throwing against unarmed Israeli civilians, but stone throwing against very well-armed Israeli soldiers. I've been there also myself a couple of times during the Friday demonstration, and what I see there is very similar to what I've seen a lot more of, actually, in South Hebron, where I've worked much more extensively. Yeah, I mean, stone throwing youth is a pretty common feature of these interactions between local people and the occupation forces when they come to raise hell. The second thing I would point to is that, yes, under the laws of occupation, which Israel claims to follow, that are laid out in international law, to which Israel's government is a signatory, some types of military force are justified in the protection of Israeli citizens and Israeli military and police security personnel. And so at least part of the argument I think that they are using for their systematically overwhelming use of force against these people. But from what I've seen, the cases in which they're taking this action and using that argument to defend it is cases where the military or other security personnel are actually taking the initiative, are being the instigators, coming in, trying to rile up response from the youth of the village, and then severely punishing them in response to the inevitable reaction from the youth. And it's really incredibly impressive how in cases from Bilain to Atuani in South Hebron Hills, where I've worked most extensively, how the vast majority of people locally, including the youth, many of them consistently choose not to respond violently.
That was Josh Huff of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation, a coalition of more than 300 organizations. Contact the campaign by calling their Washington, D.C. office at area code 202-332-0994 or visit their website at endtheoccupation.org.
Afghanistan. Yesterday, NATO is reporting the deaths of two occupation soldiers from IED attacks in undisclosed locations in eastern Afghanistan. Afghanistan. Tuesday, a bomb exploded in central Kabul early Tuesday, killing one police officer and wounding three other people, a government official reported. The early morning attack in downtown Kabul took place in an area where several government buildings stand, including the Finance and Defense Ministries, said Abdul Sabur, an official with the Interior Ministry's Counterterrorism Unit. He said two police officers and a civilian were wounded. A bomb went off as a police officer approached a device to defuse it, Sabur reported. Attacks in Kabul used to be rare, apparently not anymore. Afghanistan today, two contracting corporations, Bennett Foosh Associates and K5 Global, both owned by, quote, an American woman named Sarah Lee, are being investigated for unspecified abuses and have been suspended from further contracts. Washington, U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates is ordering 1,400 more Marines to Afghanistan as fighting escalates. Pakistan today, a a gas pipeline was blown up by unknown forces in southwestern Balochistan province, disrupting supplies of natural gas in the region. Pakistan, Tuesday late. The governor of Pakistan's central Punjab province, a senior member of the ruling party, was shot dead by one of his bodyguards on Tuesday, deepening a political crisis in a nuclear-armed South Asian nation. Salman Taseer, a liberal politician close to President Asif Ali Zardari, had no day-to-day role in the central government, but his assassination in broad daylight at a shopping center in Islamabad reinforces a sense that the government is incapable of stabilizing this Muslim country of 170 million people. A witness said Taseer was stepping out of his car in the shopping center when he was shot. Hilla, Iraq, Monday. Six mortar shells hit the U.S. base in the north of Hilla, according to a police source from Al-Mawahil Police Station. Quote, U.S. forces contacted Al-Mawahil Police Station after six mortar shells hit the U.S. base in Al-Musayab region, north of Hilla, and asked police to investigate the incident, the source told Aswad al-Iraq News Agency. Diwania, Iraq, Monday. A U.S. military vehicle was damaged on Monday by an improvised explosive device in the west of Diwania, according to a military source. Quote, the bomb exploded near a U.S. convoy in Al-Shamia district west of Diwania, damaging a U.S. vehicle. The source, who wished to remain anonymous, told Aswad al-Iraq News Agency. Wait a minute. What U.S. convoy? Aren't U.S. combat operations in Iraq supposed to be over? Oh yeah, that's been said before. Mr. Barack Obama, you promised to pull the U.S. out of Iraq. Surely you don't find developments there a promising model for Afghanistan. If not, now's the time to pull the plug, bring all the troops home today.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again.
Suppose army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
Under President Bush, many terrorist suspects who were rounded up after the 9/11 attacks were designated as unlawful enemy combatants and imprisoned without charge or trial at the Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, U.S. detention camp and elsewhere. When then-Illinois Senator Barack Obama ran for the presidency, he pledged to both close down Guantanamo and reverse what he and many other civil liberties advocates declared were Bush administration violations of the U.S. Constitution and the rule of law. However, once in the White House, President Obama embraced many of the Bush-era policies related to the war on terrorism, including continued warrantless surveillance of U.S. citizens, denial of due process of law to detainees, use of the state secrets doctrine to prevent accountability for violations of the law, and the threat of extrajudicial assassinations. Now, according to news reports, the president will soon issue an executive order outlining his administration's policy on indefinite detention, affecting some 48 prisoners being held at Guantanamo. Among the provisions said to be in the document are providing to detainees a minimal review of the government's rationale for continued detention every 6 months, and a more comprehensive annual review. While some civil liberties advocates say reviews would improve the status quo, they warned that the executive order would institutionalize indefinite detention. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with Bruce Fine, an authority on the U.S. Constitution, who served as the Associate Deputy Attorney General under President Ronald Reagan. Fine, who supported the impeachment of President Bush and Vice President Cheney, discusses his opposition to indefinite detention, his concern about unchecked executive power, and the erosion of constitutional protections.
Total number of detainees at Guantanamo from 2001 onward ranges in the neighborhood of 900 to 1,000. And say we're now down 48, 50 remaining detainees. A large percentage are from Yemen, and this executive order purports to address those. Now, the executive order really is a very minor tinkering with the status quo. That is, under Bush, a system called Combatant Status Review Tribunals was created to determine whether or not those who were detained at Guantanamo were indeed enemy combatants. It was a very fragile tribunal, if you will. The government's decision was viewed as presumptively correct. The detainee wasn't really given any notice of why he was viewed as an enemy combatant, simply asked, well, tell us why you shouldn't be an enemy combatant, without knowing any of the evidence that the government was relying on against him. The detainee couldn't offer evidence and witnesses in his own behalf. And so that system is the one that Obama is tinkering with. Perhaps his greatest flaw is structural. The Founding Fathers described the combination of judge, jury, prosecutor in a single branch as the very definition of tyranny. And that's what these tribunals are about. That is, the executive branch is judging the correctness of its own decision to capture and detain someone as an enemy combatant. And you can imagine the likelihood that they're going to find against themselves is very tiny. That's why we have in the ordinary due process system a requirement that an independent judge decide your case, not a member of the prosecution staff, you know, overseeing the prosecution, deciding whether his subordinates got it right. But that's what Obama is tinkering with regard to this executive order. I think it simply shows that other than a few commas and semicolons, he and Bush and Cheney are on the same page.
Bruce, Congress made a law where they don't provide funds to transfer Guantanamo detainees to the United States to stand trial in civilian courts or to repatriate them if they are found to be innocent and there's a need to release them. How do you view this legal limbo that the people who are found to be innocent are now going to be placed, in which they can't get a trial, they're not going to be even charged, some of these guys, and if they're found to be innocent, they cannot be released?
You know, maybe Franz Kafka perhaps would have had fun with this kind of situation, and it's not humorous because it relates to people's lives and liberties here. They're speaking of the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal 2011, which the President Obama signed just about a week ago, and it states that Congress is prohibiting the use of any funds not only to transfer any Guantanamo detainee to the United States for trial, but also to release them. Because either the executive branch or the judicial branch has found that they're not enemy combatants. So we now have Congress ordering the incarceration of people simply because at one time there was an error in believing that they were an enemy combatant, which is a monstrous violation of due process. there's any way that it can be challenged in court, my mind clearly will be held to be unconstitutional, and shows you how the fraud that is being perpetrated by the American people when you have the Congress saying, well, now we're going to recite the Constitution, and we're going to read it, and every day we'll set forth the constitutional provision that justifies what we have done. I can tell you they don't have any constitutional authority for that, and they surely do not understand the first inklings of due process, most important concept ever invented in the history of civilization. And you have to have process in order to treat persons with the dignity they command as human beings, even if you disagree with them and decide ultimately that they shouldn't get their way.
President Obama campaigned for the presidency, saying that he would reverse many of the Bush administration's what he described as violating the Constitution and the rule of law in this country. When he got into office, he pretty much did the opposite. He clung and embraced, as it's been said, many of the Bush administration's violations of civil liberties that he once decried. What course of action can the country take to really try to reverse this stuff? Are we going to have to wait for the Supreme Court to get a very solid case to find out what happens here? Or the Supreme Court, of course, in their conservative majority, may not see it the way a lot of citizens who are concerned about civil liberties see it?
Well, it's an excellent question, and unfortunately I don't have a perfect answer, but I at least have some. Number one, I agree with you. Reliance on the U.S. Supreme Court is a very fragile reliance. The history of the court over 220 years is in the long run, they can put a few speed bumps in the road, but they're going to back down to prevailing political conventional wisdom. But it means that the American political culture has to insist that the voters will not support candidates for Congress who will tolerate a president doing these things. There's nothing that prevents Congress at any time for impeaching a president, and I supported the impeachment of Bush and Cheney for doing this, for what you would call crimes against the Constitution. It doesn't have to be a federal criminal offense. And members of Congress need to accept that responsibility. Otherwise, limits on the president are toothless. And it's going to be a long process. We cannot believe in a Pollyannish way that our political culture will turn around at any time soon. We can't leave it to others. History is biography. It's you and me and all us citizens. We've got to get the thrill of self-government back. You know, we don't want to be vassals. We may make errors, but there are errors, and we'll be accountable for it.
That was Bruce Fine, who served as the Associate Deputy Attorney General under President Ronald Reagan. His latest book is titled American Empire Before the Fall.
So many soldiers said before, if you care about a soldier, then stand.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
On the 3rd of January, barely after New Year's Day, the Metro Riders Advisory Council held a public meeting, the main subject on the agenda being the bag searches, where a lot of people showed up to tell Metro, "Don't touch my junk." People coming in for the hearing. Get a load of this. Bag searches at a public meeting on bag searches.
You want to search my bags to attend a public meeting about bag searches? Metro, don't touch my junk. What a brilliant way to keep people from speaking out about bag searches. Bag searches to get into the meeting. Anyway, here's what someone had to say outside the hearing.
Yeah, and I believe that, people got to stand up for their civil rights. And, security is important, but... So is civil rights.
Yeah. But I couldn't get in there. I had just one thing to say to him. Don't touch my junk.
I hear you.
Some folks who did get into the hearing said they were going to boycott Metro over the bag searches. One man was quoted in the Washington Post as saying if a cop demanded to search his bag, he would refuse to search and boycott Metro for the next 5 trips. Here's what somebody inside the hearing had to say as recorded by another radio station.
Metro System is thus going to great expense to drive down its own ridership.
Worried about the terrorists winning. Every time somebody is searched for no reason, the terrorists win again.
That's right, Metro. And you have no right to sacrifice our civil liberties on the altar of security voodoo. What are you doing, Metro? Trying to sell cars?
3 years ago, the United States Supreme Court rejected an appeal to overturn the federal law banning so-called partial birth abortion in the case of Gonzalez versus Carhart. The 5-4 ruling demonstrated the power of the court's conservative wing, led by Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Sam Alito. The ruling has encouraged anti-abortion activists and conservative states to push for more restrictions on reproductive choice. In Nebraska, Mike Flood, the legislature's speaker, led a successful drive to ban abortion after 20 weeks of pregnancy, the harshest restriction of any state in the country. The Nebraska law is so restrictive that it forced late-term abortion provider Leroy Carhart, who served women from across the Midwest, to leave the state. Anti-abortion activists now call the Nebraska law a model bill for a future challenge to abortion rights before the Supreme Court. Justice Anthony Kennedy, long seen as a swing vote on the Supreme Court, signaled he may be in favor of restrictions on abortion rights. In his opinion in the Gonzalez case, Kennedy noted the pain and regret a woman may have after having an abortion. In stinging dissent, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote, "This way of thinking reflects ancient notions of a woman's place in the family and under the Constitution that have long been discredited."
If you watched Whale Wars last summer, you may remember the Otter Gill, the Sea Shepherd high-speed ship rammed and sunk by a Japanese whaling ship. Well, Sea Shepherd replaced her with another three-hull super ship named Gojira. Gojira is Japanese for Godzilla, and for the last few days, Japan's pirate whalers have truly had Godzilla breathing down their necks and shooting sticky things at them and towing ropes in front of their propellers. Today, the whalers made an attempt to ram and sink the Gojira while she was taking on supplies from another ship, like what they did to the Otter Gill last year. This time it didn't work so well. As the Yushin Maru No. 2 closed in on the stationary Gojira, the Steve Irwin dispatched a fast Delta boat, which intercepted the harpoon ship, deploying a prop-falling line to stop their propellers. The Yushin Maru No. 2 turned away and wound up running away under fire as the Delta bombarded its decks with over a dozen stink bombs that should ensure days of seasickness for their crew. Here's some sound from video the whalers released as they ran from Sea Shepherd's counterattack. The whalers were caught before they could kill a single whale, and Sea Shepherd can keep this up all season long by rotating refueling pits among the three ships.